Adherence is really, we have to be thinking about our patients and looking at them. And are they able to take their medicines? Are they able to manage their medications? Is it practical for the instructions that are being asked of the patient? Are they able to perform? Do they have a terrible tremor where they might not be able to put an eye drop in their eye or provide an injection if necessary? So we need to be thinking about practicality and who is able to be there with them. And then also, I think it's really important that we look at daily regimens. There's so many folks I've spoken with throughout the years, especially with pharmacy outreach, and people take their medicines every hour, on the hour, and all throughout the day. When we can combine and simplify their regimen, it's very freeing for them. So that's a huge thing that pharmacists can do to be helpful.
Welcome to the Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner Show, where quality measurement leads to better patient outcomes. This show will be your go-to source for all things related to quality improvement and medication use in healthcare. We will hit on trending health topics as they relate to performance measurements and find common ground for payers and practitioners. We will discuss how the Equip platform can help you with your performance goals. We will also make sure to keep you up to date on pharmacy quality news. Please note that the topics discussed are based on the information available at the date and time of recording. Information or guidelines are updated periodically, and we will always recommend that our listeners research and review any guidelines that are newly published. Buckle up and put your thinking cap on. The Quality Corner Show starts now.
Hello, Quality Corner Show listeners. Welcome back to the PQS podcast, where we focus on medication use, quality improvement, and how we can utilize pharmacists to improve patient health outcomes. I'm your host, Nick Dorich, and on today's show, we are kicking off a new series. In August 2021, we focused on several diverse topics related to immunizations. But for September, we're going to better understand geriatric care and how pharmacists can improve care for aging patients. As we get older, there are a number of new health concerns and new considerations for how we work with our healthcare providers and for managing our health, including how we receive and manage medications. Pharmacists may be on the front line as it relates to these changes, and whether it be managing medications, understanding how medications may be affected by declining renal or liver function, or helping patients be informed about their choices for Medicare plans and how they receive their medications to improve adherence, pharmacists are working with the aging population on a day-in, day-out basis. But like all things, there are updates to guidelines or to health coverage that may impact how a pharmacist can best help this particular population. Now, that's our topic for this month, which I hope you will enjoy, and that, like me, that you'll learn a few new best practices for managing patients. For today's episode, we are pleased to introduce a new guest to the podcast, but she has plenty of experience herself in the podcast sphere. That guest is Donna Bartlett, Associate Professor of Pharmacy Practice at the Massachusetts College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences, Worcester Campus. Donna, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here today with you, Nick.
To get us started for today's episode, we need to hear about you, Donna. What's your background with healthcare and what do you do now?
So, of course, I'm a pharmacist and I started my pharmacy career in retail pharmacy. Later on, I've always worked in the hospitals a little bit. And then later on, I became part of the MCPHS University Pharmacy Outreach Program. I was there for about 11 years, and at that point, I eventually got my PharmD through MCPHS Boston, and I was able to become a faculty member. So now I basically work mostly in geriatrics. I'm a board-certified geriatric pharmacist, and I also have a site at Health Alliance Hospital in Leominster, Massachusetts. So between the university and my site, I'm able to teach students so much about geriatric care.
Excellent. Donna, I appreciate the introduction, and we're now going to get ready for today's questions, and we're going to hear the breakdown.
Now it's time for the breakdown. As Quality Corner show host, Nick will ask three main topic questions. Our guests will have a chance to respond, and there will be some discussion to summarize the key points. This process will repeat for the second and third questions, which will wrap up the primary content for this recording. After that, expect to end on a closing summary, usually containing a bonus question. Now that we have described the process, let's jump into the questions.
Pharmacist Letter is offering CE credit for this podcast. Please log into your Pharmacist Letter account and look for the title of this podcast and the list of available CE courses. I'm Nick Dorich from PQS, and our guest today is Donna Bartlett from the Massachusetts College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences Worcester campus. Neither of us has anything to disclose. Donna, our topic for today's show is healthy aging and geriatric care. There are a number of ways in which pharmacists can contribute to patient care for this specific patient population. Before we get into how a pharmacist can be a contributing member of the patient care team in this regard, we need to address what a pharmacist can do to help patients and the care team. Here's our first question. What are the major contributors to medication-related issues for the geriatric population? How do they develop? And how does a pharmacist play a role in maximizing patient care?
So I really think that one of the big issues with geriatric care is polypharmacy. We can see that polypharmacy is truly just overarching and it incorporates many other factors. And it really is a concern for our older adult population. So with polypharmacy, there comes a host of so many other things that can happen. And we as pharmacists can really help patients and really become part of that healthcare team by helping patients. We see patients every day. So there's a number of medications that are of concern. And as medications increase in the patient, issues become compounded as well. So what are the areas where a pharmacist can help and really provide an A game, if you will? And there's so many A's that can happen. So we have to think about access, affordability, adherence, appropriateness, automation systems, and also adverse drug reactions. And I'm just going to take a minute and go through all of these because I think that they're all really important and how pharmacists can really help with polypharmacy and over-medication. So with access, we need to make certain that people can actually get the medicines that they need, right? So we have to be thinking about delivery and coverage issues. With affordability, we know that more medicines that people take, the costs go up. And not all insurances are the same, and not all pharmacies charge the same prices either. So we really have to be helpful with our patients in understanding affordability of medicines. Adherence is really, we have to be thinking about our patients and looking at them. And are they able to take their medicines? Are they able to manage their medications? Is it practical for the instructions that are being asked of the patient? Are they able to perform? Do they have a terrible tremor where they might not be able to put an eye drop in their eye or provide an injection if necessary? So we need to be thinking about practicality and who is able to be there with them. And then also, I think it's really important that we look at daily regimens. There's so many folks I've spoken with throughout the years, especially with pharmacy outreach, and people take their medicines every hour, on the hour, and all throughout the day. When we can combine and simplify their regimen, it's very freeing for them. So that's a huge thing that pharmacists can do to be helpful. In regards to appropriateness, this is really what I love to be thinking about and really what we need to be thinking about in geriatrics, the continuation of medicines. Do they need to be continued? What's happening with the patient? Are there prescribing cascades? Is the geriatric patient or older adult, are they confused or falling because of a medicine? We as pharmacists need to be thinking about that whole risk versus benefit. What's happening with the bodies? You already spoke earlier about kidney changes and liver changes and just in general body changes that happen as we age. It's normal. It's what our bodies do. So something that we've been taking for 20, 30, 40 years may not be appropriate. So a medicine that we take at 50 might no longer be appropriate at 80. So these are things that we want to be thinking about. With automation, just don't assume that, you know, someone's going to tell you that they've stopped a medicine or that they're able to call for a renewal and go through the automated systems of a doctor's office. Those things can be very difficult for our older adults. And also adverse drug reactions. We have to think any drug at any time could cause an adverse reaction. It doesn't have to be just a new start. It could be something that someone's been taking for a very long time.
Donna, thanks for the response. And you mentioned as we deal with aging, it's going to be treated differently. We often reference with pediatrics that pediatrics, it's not like you're dosing medication for a little version of a human, right? The body acts differently. And I feel like we often don't use that same type of metaphor with understanding aging and the geriatric patient. So definitely a consideration that we need to take. One follow-up question I have for you, Donna, when it does come to polypharmacy, are there any particular leading causes or events that we should look to? And I'm just thinking back from my experience working in a pharmacy or with family members and acquaintances that I've had. And typically one area that can be an issue is a patient being discharged from a hospital. There may be medications, like I think the best example, and things may be differently now, but proton pump inhibitors, right? A patient's often put on that when they're in the hospital for any extended period of time, but that's not something that they typically need. And that may have caused other drug interactions. But is that still the case? Or what other events should pharmacists, particularly community pharmacists, be thinking about so that we can better address polypharmacy for that aging population?
Absolutely. And that is perfect. What you're talking about is the whole transitions of care. And that certainly does still happen. Proton pump inhibitors are continued on unnecessarily. And for years, too, I've talked to many people and gone through many med reviews. So something that we definitely need to be thinking about and has its consequences as well. So transitions of care are such a big part of pharmacist world. And whether we're in the hospital setting or in the retail setting, or long-term care settings, it really doesn't matter. Any of those transitions are really important. I think what's important is communicating. And, you know, these med recs are one thing where you're making certain that someone has certain medicines, but really a medicine review and making certain that the medicines are appropriate and that we're going through really a checklist, if you will, is there still an issue going on here? And is this treatment still necessary? So you're right on with that. And I also just want to back up with your comment on pediatrics. I have been using that metaphor too when I teach my students, because, and even when I'm talking to older adults, because I want them to understand, like, you wouldn't do, you know, a 1-year-old to an 18-year-old, you're not going to give the same doses. So when we're looking at 65 to 95, we really need to be adjusting those too.
Great. Thanks for that, Donna. And paradoxically, I think as it relates to proton pump inhibitors, overuse of that medication in this population, it probably causes more heartburn for healthcare providers than it does anything else. So that's where we find ourselves.
Great point.
Now, Donna, I'll move us to our second topic for today. And I want to talk about some other elements about aging and geriatric care that make it a bit unique, at least here in the United States. Once we hit that magical age of 65, we are eligible for Medicare, although some patients with certain health conditions may be able to enroll in Medicare plans earlier than that. At the PQS Quality Corner Show, we are very familiar with the Medicare population and how it impacts services provided by health plans, pharmacy services that can be provided or offered to patients, and really how Medicare programs can help take care of patients that need that assistance. But what about the patient perspective? You already mentioned with the outreach program at NCPHS that you've been doing some work with patients in this space. What's it like for a patient enrolling in Medicare? How do you see, how have you worked as a pharmacist in being this kind of tour guide for the process? Because it's, while the idea of Medicare coverage is great for the patient, it is a bit of a stroll through the woods, and it's kind of easy for that patient to get lost, but it doesn't have to be that way. So do you mind sharing your thoughts on how pharmacists can help?
Absolutely. And again, this is another thing that's near and dear to my heart. Being part of the MCPHS University Pharmacy Outreach Program for 11 years, I spoke with thousands of older adults and helped them with their Medicare Part D plans. So, and I still do it. I still teach students at the college on how to navigate Medicare. We provide workshops, another colleague and I, so that they can learn it, so that we can educate when we're counseling patients on how to look at healthcare itself. So really important topic. But I think what's really important is it's confusing. And like I just spoke about earlier, you can't expect someone to be able to understand everything right away or be able to go to Medicare.gov and put in all of their medicines and the strength and how many they're taking. It's not everyone is tech savvy. And as we age, confusion sets in too. So we can't expect our 80-year-olds, even currently, I know 80-year-olds that are great on computers. I know others that have never touched a computer. So we can't just say, oh, go to this website. We really need to help these folks out. So what I love to also show as an analogy too is when we are in our working years, we are provided often insurance through our employers. That's how our system works here in the United States. But when you branch over or bridge over to Medicare, you don't have just a few things to choose from, a few insurances to choose from. You have a multitude to choose from. And then you have to figure out Medicare only covers a certain percentage. So for the healthcare side of things, so do you need more coverage for your healthcare? Typically you do. And then how are you going to combine that drug coverage? Are you going to combine it as a separate entity, a separate Medicare Part D plan, or are you going to do a combination plan, which is a Medicare Part C plan? I'm probably talking gibberish to people who do not understand Medicare A, B, C, and D, but this is what our older adults have to be thinking about and making decisions on. So this is part of the education that we try to provide. Now, just to drill it down a little bit more, I'm now just going to just talk about Medicare Part D plans, which is the drug coverage. And what's really important to know is that there's over 20 different plans just in my own region. It's regional, and it can vary all throughout the country. There are certain words that people need to understand so that when you communicate about insurance, that there's a general understanding. People have to understand what a premium is, what a deductible is, co-payments, what co-insurance is. And co-insurance is a percentage of the full cost of the medicine. A lot of people in the majority of people don't know what the full cost of a medicine is. So even if you have to pay 25% of a full cost of a medicine, what is that full cost? Is it $50? Is it $500? So that information is not always readily available for folks. There's also things called coverage gap. Also, the old term was donut hole. That has closed, but there still is a gap, if you will, where we fluctuate throughout co-payments and co-insurance and what we're paying. And then there's also a tier system. So, you know, blow your mind. There are all these things that we need to know. As pharmacists, we need to be able to communicate that to our patients. And I know that not all pharmacists know this, depending upon where they work. If a hospital pharmacist, they don't necessarily know all of this, where maybe a retail pharmacist would know more of this. So in being able to understand that and help patients understand it is really important in helping them select. One thing I would like to bring up, or actually two more items I'd like to bring up, is that there's a new tier that has come out over the past year or two, and it's called the sixth tier, and it's pretty much focused for diabetes medications, which is wonderful. And they're really reducing the cost for diabetes medications. Some insurances are. So if you're able to help a patient find an insurance that has a sixth tier, especially if they're using insulin, that can be just wonderful for them, where costs are just, you know, thwarted incredibly for the patient. So something to be thinking about moving forward, especially as we approach open enrollment, which is October through December. The other things that are really important is to combine other assistance. So does the patient qualify for Medicaid in the state? Do they qualify for extra help through Social Security? That's national. And there's a lot of people who fall through that crack who could have a reduction in their Medicare Part D plans, and they just need to apply for extra help through Social Security. There's also state pharmacy assistance programs, depending upon the state. They're not in every state. Massachusetts has a great one. New York has a wonderful one. So they do exist, and it's good to know what's happening in your state. The other thing that I would like to bring up is that there are protected classes for drugs. So people might get really nervous about, oh, I know my meds are covered. I don't want to switch over because these meds are really important for me, especially maybe someone who had a transplant and they want to make certain that their meds are covered. They get comfortable with knowing that certain meds are covered. But there are 6 protected classes, and I think it's important that pharmacists understand this too. I'm just going to run down real quick what they are. Anticonvulsants, antidepressants, oral chemotherapy drugs, antipsychotics, antiretrovirals for HIV, and also immunosuppressants for those patients that have had transplants. So these are really important to understand that insurances have to cover these. And so we can find affordable plans for folks through the Medicare.gov plan finder and know that these medicines should be covered, would be covered. However, tier systems do vary between the insurances. I know that's a loaded question, but it really shows the But I think it shows the complexity and how confusing this is for our older adults.
Yeah, it certainly is for older adults, but also even for caregivers, right? Because if you've got a patient that is, let's say, 70, 75, 80, they may have their children or, you know, helping them identify that plan. And if you're someone that is, you know, 45, 50 years old that isn't actively looking, going in and trying to identify this item, you're absolutely right, Donna. You mentioned it, you know, your commercial insurance or your insurance through your employer, that's going to be a very different kind of system and setup than what it may be for Medicare. Some of the terminology may be the same: premiums, deductibles, copay, et cetera. There's a lot that can be similar, but how they operate may be differently because Medicare is a different type of program. Employer insurance is a different type of program. The other item I was thinking through about this, we started talking off question one, polypharmacy, managing those medications. Often it seems like pharmacies are doing those medication reviews or comprehensive medication reviews, CMRs for patients. They seem to happen frequently in the beginning of the year because there's new Medicare coverage. Those patients need to get the CMR, or it may be occurring at the end of the year to help those health plans get that CMR rate up. But in my mind, as I talk with pharmacists, as I talk with patient groups about this sort of thing, you mentioned that open enrollment, which is going to be starting up in just about a month or so. A good time for those medication reviews is probably to be, it's probably right before that patient is selecting the new plan, right? Because you want to make sure you're working with the patient and their prescriber or prescribers to make sure the patient's not on any unnecessary medications, to review if there's medications or regimens that may be more cost efficient. So, you know, just thinking through between that, and then you had mentioned as well the protected medication classes, that's a really important element for patients. Are there any other considerations as to really when's the best time to do those medication reviews so that a patient can best select their Medicare plan?
Right. So, and I definitely agree that during this open enrollment time, it's an excellent time to be thinking about that. And that's when a lot of times at the outreach program, we would be getting the calls and people would be asking about plans and we would see things. And being pharmacists, it'd be glaring to us, why are you still on this proton pump inhibitor, for example? And, you know, and getting these conversations going, you know, duplicate therapies and things such as that. So it's a great time to review and even start to empower the patients in regards to medicine reviews. The other thing that I think is really important is to understand that insurances, they set the parameters for the medication reviews that are covered. So 1 year, you might be covered for a medication review. If you go to a lower cost drug or something and you fall out of the dollar amount, or maybe you reduce the number of meds that you're taking, that can alter whether or not you qualify for the medication review. So those are things, not to say like, oh, you should stay on meds for that. I just think we need to rethink that medicine reviews should happen always. I think every encounter, whether it be at the pharmacy, if someone's buying an OTC, is that for you? Like, are there going to be any interactions to, you know, you're at the doctor's office and you're listing your meds. Is that really a med review or is somebody just taking your new list of meds? So every time there's an encounter, there should be a med review.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad that you took the conversation there. And it's more specifically, right, a medication review for which the pharmacist or healthcare provider can bill and be paid for that service, right? A pharmacist can always do a medication. Every time you're dispensing a prescription, you're reviewing the medication, maybe not to that full extent, but there's always some element of a medication review that goes on. I would add two final things before we move to the next item. You know, one, as it goes to that outreach and plan selection, it's good for pharmacists to start that part early, because if you're identifying medications that may need to be tailored a bit or removed, that prescriber may want to see the patient for a visit or blood work. So if you're doing that review in October to get those changes, well, the patient may not be able to be seen until December or January. So think ahead. That's always important. And then the other aspect, I want to make sure we hit on this part. Donna, you know this as well as I do, but we'll make sure we cover it here. When assisting patients with a Medicare plan, pharmacists can help patients identify the plan that's right for them or the medications that may be there, but of course cannot steer patients to a specific plan. So making sure that we're noting that you want to give the patient the right information, but you're not making the choice for them. Can't do that. So we're going to make sure we check all of our boxes and note that as well.
All right. I agree.
Great. Well, excellent. We'll move to our third and final topic for today. And when we reached out to you about coming on the show, Donna, you were emphatic about your passion and interest in appropriate medication management for the geriatric population. More specifically, you identified the topic of deprescribing. Now, I will note for our audience that today's episode is an introduction to healthy aging and geriatric care, but we are also planning a full episode to just deprescribing. So we'll have a deeper dive, but I at least want to introduce the topic now and cover the basics. So Donna, what is a deprescribing action plan like for a patient, and what best practices can you share?
Sure. And thank you for asking me this question, because this is so important to me, and especially for our older adults. So thank you for asking. I think what's most important first is that we actually define deprescribing. So I just want to take a quick minute to do that. And it's the thoughtful practice of stopping, reducing, or changing a medication to a safer alternative with a healthcare provider or team. So we want to make certain that we're optimizing medicine. So it's not just the you're giving up on a patient, let's forget about, which some people think. I think deprescribing sometimes has that thought for people, but really, it's really optimizing. So we want to deprescribe to optimize medicines. And the best practices in regards to deprescribing is to make certain that they're patient-centered, that they're team-based, and that they're proactive. It's so important that we really, like you're saying earlier, take an earlier look at things before other changes occur. So for example, we really don't want to wait for the toxicity to occur or the fall or, the adverse drug reaction to happen. Let's be proactive about it. And as we age, and as we talked about in our first question and answer is, what's happening to our bodies as we age? So what's happening and how long have we been on a medicine for? And is it still safe for us? Or could we be heading down a road of adverse drug reactions, for example? So you mentioned what's the process for a patient? And I've been doing a lot of research on this recently. There's a lot of step-by-step guides for practitioners and for providers to use, but there's really not a lot for patients. So I've taken the liberty, if you will, of combining some of these ideas and came up with a patient approach to deprescribing, because what we're learning is that in order for deprescribing to occur, we need to educate everybody. It's not just the prescribers or the pharmacists that are dispensing, but it's the patients too in the healthcare system. Everyone needs to be educated on this. So educating patients and having a plan that they understand is super important. So I have a medication optimization plan, otherwise known as MOP, and because we like to clean things up, right? We want to clean up these polypharmacy lists. So we're going to mop things up here. And the first step is to list all the medicines. And you're like, okay, so another med list. But with this list, we want to put the reason why we're taking the medicine. We want to ask ourselves, does this problem still exist? How, you know, if we've had an issue when we're in our 20s, 30s, or 40s, have we had lifestyle changes? Do we still have an issue here? Maybe it was depression for an episode because of some major life change, but we've gone beyond it. And, you know, do we still need that antidepressant on board? Though these are things that we need to be considering. So does the problem still exist? And then the other question that you want to ask is the medicine controlling the issue? And so, you know, those are kind of the ebb and flow, if you will, as to kind of deciding whether or not a medication is still necessary. But if you're uncertain about any of these, just put a question mark down. That starts your questions for your provider to start these conversations. The other thing I think that is a really important question to ask yourself is, have I had to self-treat with an over-the-counter or a supplement, or am I taking some vitamin for some reason since either my last visit or have I been doing this for a while? You could be treating a side effect and not realizing it. I've been to the doctors and they're like, do you think you're experiencing any side effects? And I'm thinking, that's a really odd question. How would somebody know if it's a side effect or something new? So asking, what have you had to self-treat might be a better way to understand what somebody is doing. Oh, I've had lots of headaches, or I felt really dizzy, or my stomach's been really upset lately. It could be that it could be a side effect to some medicines. The second part is to, you know, review this medication list and start developing these questions. And step three is to then have the conversation with your provider at that time. So you have your meds, you have your questions, and you start going through these questions with your provider. At that point, you can decide with your provider whether or not there are any medicines that you could deprescribe, and, you know, which meds are appropriate, which ones might not be appropriate any longer. The fourth step is to make a plan. And this is really important because another thing is our communication, right? There are so many medicines that you might take for, say, blood pressure. You might be thinking one medicine and somebody's thinking another one. You want to make certain that you're writing down the medicine that you're speaking on, because you don't want to go home and go, was it the Losartan or was it the levothyroxine that I'm supposed to, you know, start switching up? Those can have major differences. So we want to make certain that we write it down, that we write down the correct medicine. And we also need to know, are we going to stop it? Are we reducing it, or are we changing it to something else? And those are also really important questions to make certain you understand before you leave the doctor's office, or, you know, while we as pharmacists are communicating with patients that are maybe changing up their medicines, is this going to be a stop, reduce, or change? And then the last step is to monitor, document, and follow up. And with the monitoring, documenting, and follow up, we want to ask or determine, is there a lab I should be thinking about that I need done in X amount of time? If something is being reduced, you know, do I have to have my blood work done? Or are we telling a patient, you know, this has been a change, you really need to make certain that you're having your labs checked? Should you be self-monitoring at home? Do you need to be checking your blood pressures or your heart rate or maybe your weight? You know, there's, or how you feel, right? Are you happy? Are you sad? Are you, you know, feeling like you're headed towards depression if things are being changed up with depression meds? So we need to self-monitor too. And we have to understand with our providers what that self-monitoring is. I think the biggest question we need to ask is, how do I feel? And it could be that there's no change. And is that a bad thing? I know we always want to feel better, or, you know, like everything, we need to have a better outcome. But sometimes when we're looking at deprescribing, we might be looking for no change. It could be just an unnecessary medication that we've had on board that we can reduce or change or stop and not have really any change, but that could be okay. And then the last thing that I really want to make certain that we as pharmacists really take into account is any change needs to be communicated with the pharmacy. So if a patient's saying, oh, that's stopped, make certain those auto refills are stopped too. Make certain that they're not sitting in the bin waiting to be picked up when, you know, because they've already been auto refilled. So those are some of the steps that we really need to be careful of. And even when we're looking at auto refill lists, let's, you know, do that as part of our med review. Look at all the strengths. Maybe somebody has done a slow taper. They don't need the 20 milligram any longer. They're only on the 10 milligram now. So let's make certain that the 20 milligram isn't being auto refilled. So those are just some things that we really need to be thinking about as a team approach, patient-centered care that we want to look at for deprescribing.
Donna, that makes a lot of sense, especially as we think about it from the patient empowerment approach. And we're seeing a lot of that now, both for older adults, but also, I mean, just really for the entire population. And thinking through that aspect, the documentation and monitoring, it really starts from the moment of that, you know, prescription being written or even before, right? If a prescriber is writing that prescription for the patient, what's the intended outcome? Why are they taking the medication? What's the expectation? Is this something they're going to be taking, you know, chronically for the rest of their life? Is this going to be something that they take at this dosage, at this regimen, until they start experiencing side effects X, Y, Z? Is this something that they're going to take until they hit this clinical outcome? There's a lot of components. And I think actually pharmacists have been asking this for a long time, right? When a prescription is written, you want to have, well, are there any related diagnosis codes that are going to be tied to this? Are there any expectations for recommendations for, you know, for dosing? If there's a medication that is in the same class that could be more efficient for the patient based on either, you know, cost tiering with their insurance or other aspects. There's a lot there where the pharmacy team can be better utilized in the healthcare system and can be really seen as a patient advocate. Now, the other item I want to ask you about before we wrap up this question, when it comes to deprescribing, there's a lot of questions that pharmacists have on how to do that appropriately with patients. With what we've seen at PQS, there's been a quality measure related to use of high-risk medications in the elderly, and that's based on the Beers List criteria that was previously a star rating measure in Medicare. And pharmacists often didn't like that measure or having that conversation with patients because the patients, they had said, hey, I've been taking this medication for X amount of years, or hey, I really need this medication because it helps me sleep, or I really need this medication because my doctor says so. And that can create a bit of a tense situation between pharmacist, patient, and then potentially prescriber. So when it comes to deprescribing, you touched on this a little bit about communication, but I want to make sure we hit the nail on the head. What's the best way for the pharmacist to go into that conversation with the patient or prescriber? I assume for me, it's patient-centered care. We start with the patient, but how do we get them to really understand that context?
Yeah, and that is such a great question. In regards to taking that approach, some are going to be very open to this. I do think that kind of getting an understanding from the patient of a change, if you will. So for example, when we're asking about smoking cessation, we often have to take an approach with the patient and see how likely are they to change. So how likely is this person willing to talk about their medicines and think about maybe stopping some of their medicines? So you can start with that approach. If it's like, no, you're not taking any of these away from me, which happens, then, you know, you're going to be bringing it up again. Or you might say, you might ask, have you had any, and you might be thinking of some certain side effects. Have you felt dizzy or lightheaded when you've gotten up? Or have you had a fall recently or felt that you're not as balanced as you have been? And asking some of those questions might lead you into talking about a particular medicine that you're concerned about. Are you up in the middle of the night having to use the restroom when you are taking an Ambien, for example? Or I noticed this is a really high dose for you now. It really should be cut back. So I think that there are some things that you can approach the patient with. what I really like and what other people have said to me who have counseled, and I've counseled caregivers too about how they should approach their parents. Like, this is great. We totally get it. How do we tell our parents that, you know, we want them to reduce their medicines? And I think one of the best things is like that pause and monitor. So we're just going to take a little break from this. Just see how you do. We're going to reduce it. See how you do. Nothing is like concrete. It doesn't mean you can't go back to it. And I think having that comfort for people to know that let's just try this kind of idea can be very beneficial. The other thing that we have to do is to change our language in regards to how we're introducing meds. And for, like you had just said, Nick, you know, these chronic meds, you're taking it for the rest of your life. We cannot say that anymore. We have to say indefinitely, because we're living longer. Medicines have allowed us to live longer and a better quality of life for years. Like, we are now living in our 80s and 90s, but that medicine that got us from 60 to 80, that really helped us, but it might not help us anymore as our kidneys and liver change. So I think stating that, you know, you will be taking this, you know, indefinitely, but there could be a time when you're not going to need this anymore, or we're going to, you know, change things up. It won't be so surprising, because when you tell people who now have in their head, I'm taking this for the rest of my life, you're giving up on them if you're taking medicines away. So that's an issue.
Donna, I had not thought of it like that, but that's a really great point on managing that medication and managing the expectations, especially when it comes to that geriatric patient population. But really, for all of us, having the independence and autonomy for decision making is a really big deal. So however you can feel like you're still giving the patient that they are empowered for making that choice and that you're not giving up on them is huge for changing the emotions that are related to. And it is a very emotional you know, consideration for the patient, certainly for their care team, for their family that may be care providers as well. So that's a great point to add. And I think that's a great way for us to kind of close that. As we've been talking about this topic, Donna, as I'll note, as you and I went back and forth in planning for this episode and what we were going to cover, you know, you had mentioned that, hey, this is pretty easy. This is all about patient-centered care. And I think that's been the focus for today. That's the focus for every patient population. It's just that for this one, it's a little bit more intense because as we do get older, again, there's other health issues. We hate to recognize that, but we have to deal with it. And, you know, Donna, I'll now get us to the closing segment for today's show. And before we proceed further, I have to express my sincere gratitude for you, our guest, Donna Bartlett, for joining the show. You've been fantastic in providing us with some great information. And I'll give our listeners a little bit of the kind of behind baseball aspect of it. And it's a small world out there. And when we're planning podcasts, we do so weeks, if not months in advance. And I like to see what else is going on out there. So months ago, I was researching different pharmacy related podcasts, what's out there, what exists, who's doing what in areas that are general, but then even more some of the, you know, niche topics. And one that caught my eye right away was that there was this geriatric care, healthy aging pharmacist service podcast run by or co-hosted by Donna Bartlett. And in my mind, I thought, hey, I should reach out to Donna. This would be someone great to have as a contact. And listening to some of the episodes has some really great information. And sure enough, fast forward a few months, I had the opportunity to reach out as we were planning this series, and you were kind enough to agree to come on. So I do want to give you the platform here, Donna, to share more information about the podcast. I'll give a little bit of information here and then let you add the rest of the details. But you co-host a podcast for the Senior Care Pharmacist Journal, and that's for the American Society of Consultant Pharmacists, or ASCP. So can you give us more information? You know, what do you cover? What do you do with that podcast, and where can people find it?
Sure. So thank you so much. And I'm so glad you found that. It makes me happy that people are listening. So the Senior Care Pharmacist Journal that is put out by ASCP, each month we highlight a particular author. Another co-host and I share the responsibilities to do this. And I'm lucky enough to interview pharmacists who have done various geriatric studies all throughout the world, which is really exciting for me. I get to speak to people from, you know, Australia and all throughout the United States. So I get to learn about their research and talk about it and how it relates to geriatrics. So I'm very lucky to be able to be the co-host for that. I do, you can actually find it. You can just even Google the Senior Care Pharmacist podcast and it will come up that way. So that's an easy way to find it. It's also TSCP that you can look up.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised looking at both the journal and the podcast itself. Not sure what it is. There seems to be a lot of authors that come from Australia. You mentioned that. And that was one of the immediate things that jumped out to me. You know, here when we're thinking about care, it's usually what's kind of US-based, but certainly other countries and how care may be provided or other opportunities. There's a lot we can learn internationally as well. So just my interesting tidbit that I realized when researching the show. Well, Donna, again, thank you for joining today's podcast. Before we close, if one of our listeners wants to ask you a question about what we just discussed today about geriatric care, healthy aging, you know, how you can assist with Medicare planning for patients, how can they contact you?
Sure. So I do have a website and it's all based on deprescribing. It's Wise and Well with Donna Bartlett. And you can, you just need to put in donnabartlett.com and my website will come up. There's a blog each week on information on deprescribing. So you might glean some information from that, but you can either post a comment or you can sign up for emails and I would then get your email and we can certainly connect. So you can put comments in and questions there.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Donna, and appreciate having you on the show today. Again, for everyone, recommend you check out Donna's website, her podcast with the ASCP team as well. And that will now wrap up our content for today's episode. So for our listening audience of the PQS Quality Corner Show, make sure you subscribe to our podcast here. And if you have a question or topic, please let us know. If you'd like to come on the show and talk about a specific topic, we would also love that. You can DM us directly on Twitter at Pharmacy Quality or by emailing info@pharmacyquality.com. With that, I again appreciate you listening to the Quality Corner Show. And there is one final message from the PQS team.
The Pharmacy Quality Solutions Quality Corner Show has a request for you. Our goal is to spread the word about how quality measurement can help improve health outcomes. And we need your help in sharing this podcast to friends and colleagues in the healthcare industry. We also want you to provide feedback, ask us questions, and suggest health topics you'd like to see covered. If you are a health expert and you want to contribute to the show or even talk on the show, please contact us. You can email info@pharmacyquality.com. Let us know what is on your mind, what we can address, so that you are fully informed. We want you to be able to provide the best care for your patients and members. And we wish all of you listeners out there well.